Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Gamer Horizon, and this is your host Anthony, and I am joined by Ari.
Hello, hello.
And I am joined by Ted.
Going on.
And Alex is not here because, you know, we took over.
We took over. I have guinea pigs. They're talking a lot. A guinea pig. You ever have pets?
Huh, I have a dog that's really annoying, but...
I have guinea pigs. Right now they're popcorning.
Popcorning? What the fuck?
Popcorning is a term what guinea pigs do when they're happy or excited. They'll just start jumping in place and basically hopping around like they were a popped corn kernel. They just go pop, pop, pop. They're very excited because I have no idea. Oh, they're both popcorning.
And now, I have a cat and she wants to eat my face.
Why do you have face eating?
You have a dog that's kind of an idiot. That is an idiot. And I have a dog that's not an idiot. So there you go. I don't know... I don't know what to do with them, you know? I don't know if I want guinea pigs now, because I'd rather see fucking popcorn than my dog run into a wall, and I don't want a cat surely eating my face, so I don't know what to do.
Guinea pigs mostly eat hay. You can buy a very large bag of hay for $10 that lasts at least a month.
Fucking better than dog food.
All we have to do with them is clean their cage once a week, take them out, and then we give them scritches, and then they go running around, and they go, and then I go, it's fantastic.
Good old fucking guinea pigs. Although, if I could, I would own a Pikachu. If I could.
Yeah, but Pikachus are temperamental and can kill you. Think about it. You get shocked. You don't like getting shocked. No one likes getting electric shocks. It's not fun.
But there's people I would like Pikachu to shock.
It's not a good kind of pain. Like when a guinea pig bites my finger, I go, oh, that's adorable. Pikachu shocks you. It's like, no, I want my heart to work.
Would you own any Pokemon?
Would I own a Pokemon? I would own a Psyduck, because, you know, they're awesome.
What about you, Ted? What Pokemon would you own?
Bayleaf.
Is that a new one?
I picked a Pokemon I knew on purpose you wouldn't know, because you clearly only know the first 150, and I will now make fun of you silently.
I know a little
dork.
Bit of the...
Dork!
Very silent,
I know dork. A little, but I don't know Silver Pokemon very well.
Bayleaf was the first evolution of the grass starter in second generation, and it goes, Bayleaf! Bayleaf! Bayleaf!
Huh, I never played second generation. I never even bought the remake from a couple years back, so I don't know.
I heard the remakes were really good, actually.
The remakes are good.
I remember they added some cool features, like there was a radio or something, and there's a night and day feature and all kinds of stuff, so.
I don't know, I'm kind of looking forward to the new game, though, the 3DS one.
I'm not, because unless they break compatibility with the current generation, because otherwise it never ends, because you can bring in the Pokemon from the Game Boy Advance into the original DS, and to the next DS game into the 3DS. It's like, oh, I'll just keep the chain going.
Will they ever do the MMO?
No, because Nintendo... I don't know, insert Nintendo joke here.
Right.
Well, hey, they done roguelike Pokemon games, so... Why
That's
not
true,
in
the Mysterious Dungeon games, right?
They did Pokemon Conquest.
Well, that's
Oh, different. Yeah.
I don't know if I would call that wasn't a roguelike.
Well, wasn't that a crossover or something?
Yeah, that was a crossover between Pokemon and Dynasty Warriors.
Who would have thought? But then again, you know, Nintendo's doing a Fire Emblem and Shin Megami...
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. That seems to make more sense to me, though. They seem more compatible than Pokemon and, like, what was it? What's the guy's name? Nobunaga? Nobunaga's Ambition or something? Remember that game? That game?
Nobunaga's Ambition was what they did before they decided to go out with Dynasty Warriors. They haven't really done Sims since Dynasty Warriors took off. By the way, Dynasty Warriors 8 been announced.
Well, that's something.
Zhao Yun will still probably be the guy on the cover.
And we'll fight against the Yellow Turban Army again, or whatever they're called.
So sick of the fucking Yellow Turban Army. I played through Dynasty Warriors Next on Vita, and then I was done. I was like, all right, I can delete it!
I remember a few years back I rented Romance of the Three Kingdoms, one of those games, and I liked it, but then, you know, it got a little boring. I guess I'm stupid or something, I don't know.
There was a Super Nintendo game way back in the day called Gemfire. And it was just the same genre of game, but somehow I just totally got into it. I wish I could, like, remember it now, but it's just been so long since I've played it. But there's actually some fun to be had in that genre if you actually learn it.
I'll look for that one. That one sounds fine.
No, don't look for that one. Get one of the new ones. I mean, that one was great then, but or at least it was to me, who was new to the genre at the time. But if you're going to play that genre, get one of the newest ones.
Well, what would be a good one then?
I don't know. I don't play them anymore.
You're like, oh, I don't. I get one of the new ones, but I don't know. So, well, I could always get... What about Civilization? Would that fit into that genre, I suppose? I remember that Civilization Revolution from a few years back. I kind of like that one.
Civ Rev was okay. Civ Rev had some of the culture mechanics I like. Like Civ 5, you can't culture your way to owning a city. You cannot use culture to gain territory on a rival territory, which sucks because that was one of my favorite things about Civ 4, and you can also do that in Civ Rev. But Civ 5 at least solves the major problem that Civilization games have had, which is unit stacking.
I haven't played a Civilization game since maybe, well, other than Civ Rev, but like a main one since 3, I think, so.
So the thing about Civ 4 and everything before that was one of the tricks you could do is just have they call it like the murder ball. You just get a ton of units, stack them on one tile, and just have them move, and they will run over anything they run into. In Civ 5, you can only have one unit per tile, period.
So it's like a balance-solving issue, then, it sounds like, with Civ 5.
Yeah, basically, some units are melee and some are ranged and can attack from alongside a single, one square. And then one of the other things is cities no longer need to have a unit garrison in them. Cities can fight back themselves.
You know, maybe I'll have to look for some Civilization, because I'm kind of in the mood to play it, Ted.
Let me see. I am on the Steam store right now, and Civilization $29.99. You can purchase it. Of course, there's also the Game of the Year edition, which is $49.99 and has everything.
Well, I get some money next week. I might as well buy the motherfucker.
Or you could wait for a sale, like a good Steam shopper.
Because Steam has a lot of sales, but I'm not very familiar with it, and I have an account that I haven't used in years, so doesn't exactly help. But since we're talking about games that we have played in the past, let's move to the present. And what does that mean? Well, what has everyone been playing? So let's start with Ari, since you were absent last week. What have you been playing, good sir?
This week I have been playing... Well, I finally got to the end of Ni No Kuni, so I'm glad to be at the end of that road, because I was in it for 80 hours. But, you know, you saw the reviews, I'm sure. But I've also been playing Persona 3 still. I'm on an absolutely ridiculous boss that uses an ability that can charm the whole party. And when it's not doing that, it's using a Garu spell that hits everyone for ridiculous amounts of damage, and it's stupidly hard.
Is it the boss I think it is?
I mean, it's just one of the random bosses you come across. It's one of those enemies that looks like a pair of dancers that are spinning around with their little swords.
Oh, those fucking things were annoying.
Yeah, so it's one of those guys, and it's incredibly powerful, and I'm playing on hard still, so, I mean, it's kicking my ass. So I'm grinding a bit before I get a little further into Tartarus.
I think that's the way you should play some of the newer ports of the Persona games, because it feels like the normal difficulty, both in Golden and P3P, have been kind of downed a bit, you know, made accessible for new people, obviously. So it sounds like for those of us who played, say, FES or the original Persona 4 on PS2, and to be quite frank, Persona 4 on PS2 was a much harder game on normal than it was on PS Vita. You know, it sounds like that's the way to go for some of us. So,
I guess if you're like really confident in your skills in RPGs or in the Shin Megami Tensei universe, yeah. But for Persona 3, if you're like a first timer, stick to normal. It's easier than the PS2 versions, but hard is quite appropriately named.
Well, for me, I think hard would be perfect, because I've been thinking about playing P3P.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
And what I'm considering is playing in a hard, because I did beat FES. I have beat FES. And that was shit years ago. And I remember the final boss took me about 2 hours to fucking beat.
Yeah, well, you're going to be playing the game a long time full on 70 or 80 hours, probably, if you play on hard.
That sounds fine to me. That's what I expect from a Persona game, so.
Sounds good.
You can't go wrong with that.
Moving on, I also started playing Resistance 2, believe it or not, on PS3.
Oh, that's on my backlog.
Yeah, exactly. You know, after freaking 80 hours of Ni No Kuni, I wanted to do something on my backlog, and I picked up Resistance 2, and I really wish I hadn't. It's a lot of better first-person shooters I should be playing right now. I mean, it's a cool game. It's got some cool set pieces, but I'm just kind of annoyed by it more often than not.
JRPG, I always find myself going to like a shooter or something different afterwards. Yeah. After you, because I played a lot of Persona 4 Vita, and I ended up playing, what the hell was I playing? I played Halo 4, so. I mean,
yeah, that's also on my backlog. I need to get to Halo 4, too. I'm planning on doing it co-op with my friend here, but.
Okay, because the thing about Halo 4 is if you don't have friends and you just want to do the Spartan Ops matchmaking, you can only play the levels that they say you can, so be warned about that.
Interesting.
Yeah, like, I have to play Episode 8 before Monday, and then they shelve it, and then after, then it's only Episode 9.
Huh.
Yep.
Sounds odd.
No, that's how it's been.
Well, I just want to play the campaign.
That's I borrowed it from my brother. I didn't even buy it, so I don't know why I haven't touched it, because I really enjoyed what I played of it, like, the first couple hours. And I will say this. I'm like Ari. I just want to play the campaign. I used to be a big multiplayer guy. You might even remember that from the Games of Me days, Ted. Remember how much Halo I used to play? But yeah. I just don't dig multiplayer as much as I used to. I don't know why.
I haven't been able to get into multiplayer shooters lately either. I mean, back in the day, I was playing all kinds of, like, Counter-Strike and, like, Halo 2 and Halo 1 and, you know, I was into it, but lately they've added the whole RPG progression to first-person shooters and multiplayer, which I guess is good, but it's just annoying to me to go into a game where a bunch of the other players have advantages just because of, you know, it's not balanced. They've leveled up to the point where they
really... What advantages do they have? Are we talking about Halo 4 and people not have the...
Halo 4, but
Call of Duty, I can see, like, where you're...
Any first-person shooter where you're allowed to equip your starting character with a bunch of unlocked guns that are more powerful than the default starting weaponry. I mean, you know, it's not a balance.
Name a game where the weapons that you unlock are better than the default starting weaponry.
Maybe not necessarily the weapons.
Name one.
The attachments in Call of Duty? Or okay, maybe even Battlefield.
Okay, attachments, that's because you have to use the gun more, and by the time you get the attachments, you're more familiar with the way the gun handles.
But it still makes it easier, which is an unfair advantage for someone new. For example, if you're using iron sights, what would you prefer, iron sights or a holographic or laser sight?
Iron sights.
Well, you're weird.
I don't know.
They're better.
Okay.
I don't know.
I've always found that, like, picking up a weapon that has, like, the laser dot for aiming or any of those extra features is just a better weapon than the default weapon, at least for a novice player.
Yeah, but I mean, it scrubs you out.
Advanced players are, you know, that's a different story if you're, like, really an expert at all this. But to somebody that's jumping into a first-person shooter multiplayer mode for the first time and they're facing, you know, enemies that are shooting rockets at them and whatever else, it's just, you know, it's not welcoming. Online.
That's not why they're losing, though. That's not why they're losing, though.
Why are they losing then?
Because they don't know the unwritten rules.
Unwritten rules. Glitches?
No. Jesus Christ, no. If you get a shotgun in a multiplayer match, what should you do?
Go to close range.
How do you get to close range?
Well, you either camp until somebody walks by, or you go charging ahead and hope you don't die on the way.
Camping is a good strategy, but how do you... I could play 20 questions all day, but there's basically rules about how you play a multiplayer shooter once you get a shotgun and you want to use the shotgun. You have to maneuver differently and expand your and examine your territory differently and make sure you examine the layout of the map differently.
I'm not saying there isn't a way to grow as a player and you know, learn the intricacies of the game. I just feel that sometimes the progression system undermines the balance.
I agree with Ari, but Ted has a point. I mean, you know, in what he's saying with the unwritten rule, you find that in, you know, that's common in other games. For example, you know, that's the same in Battlefield, and that's the same in, you know, Call of Duty. But what I get what Ari's saying as well, where they're like Call of Duty just seems to have balance issues. I think stuff like kill streaks break it as well.
There are shooters that don't have RPG mechanics. I can point you to a couple that are available right now, and they're super cheap.
Okay, if they don't have RPG mechanics, that's fine by me. I don't miss that. So,
have either of you played Global Offensive yet, Counter-Strike?
I tried it for a bit when it was in the beta, and I'm like, well, I still hate Counter-Strike.
Well, there you go.
I've never really played Counter-Strike. I've never really got in. I never really played it, to be honest.
It can be very addicting. Like, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it aside from, you know, team-based multiplayer shooter, but something about it just, like, keeps you coming back. I mean, you start each round with some money, and if you win the round, you get more money to buy more weapons, but it's like everybody has the same starting point at the start of the round, and I don't know, the maps are well-designed. It's just a good game. Even today, the old classic maps still hold up.
Yeah, a lot of people still play. I mean, you know, it's still pretty popular. It's gone through several revisions, I'm sure. You know, I know there's a version on PS3 that was released not too long ago, so maybe I'll try that, or maybe I'll even try to track down the original version, which I'm sure is on Steam, correct, Ari?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a Valve product now, I believe.
That sounds good. Then maybe, you know what, maybe next week I'll play some Counter-Strike, and I'll let you guys know how it goes.
Sounds good.
That sounds good. Sounds good. And maybe you should play some, and then maybe we could get a match going, me and Ari, and Ted won't play with us, so that's okay.
Well, I've been given a homework assignment. I'm supposed to dig into Fire Emblem, and we'll see how that is. I'm going to be dealing with all kinds of crap in that game, like permadeath, yay!
Yay,
you can turn that off!
Yeah, I know, but...
So, anything else you've been playing, Ari?
Yeah, well, I did the SimCity closed beta, which I absolutely loved. That was already a couple of weeks ago, but I wasn't on last week, so... I really, really enjoyed the SimCity closed beta. I can understand why there's a lot of criticism on the internet about the game, especially to the diehard fans of the series who are basically looking for a direct sequel to SimCity 4. There's a lot of features from the older game that just, you know, isn't present in the new SimCity, such as, you know, really large city sizes. The basic map size in the new SimCity is equal to the medium size from SimCity 4, or very similar to. And, you know, people are upset about the whole always online thing. There's people that just can't stand Origin. There's a new method of zoning that's alienating to some people. There's no terraforming in the game. You can't make the map with mountains and rivers and lakes exactly how you want it to. You have to use default regions. There's no subways. You know, there's going to be a barrage of DLC like in The Sims, most likely. It's just, the list goes on. And I've been seeing people on GameFAQs posting complaints all the time about this game. And yet, having played the beta, I just completely fell in love with it. I mean, the new features are amazing. The way it looks, the way it feels, and the way you can actually see the city working down to the smallest detail. It's just, to me, it's an amazing step forward for this series.
So that begs the question then. So this game seemingly just has more detail than previously seen, because I remember, like, as far back with maybe the original SimCity, or was it SimCity 3000 that was on the SNES?
No, the original SimCity was on the SNES.
Okay. What was SimCity 3000 then? I know I played that.
I played SimCity 3000 on PC.
Okay, that's, I might have played that on PC. I remember, you know, sometimes you could see cars moving and just people moving, but the details are like actual people, like, you know, going in the stores and interacting with each other and things like that, is what you're saying?
Yeah, what the older games did was they would, you know, interpret the city and how it was working, and then show you some traffic if it needed to show you some traffic. Whereas in the new SimCity, every single car is actually going to somewhere and from somewhere. So, for example, you'll have a car coming in off the highway. It's trying to find a place where it can move in, right? So it'll find a residential area and move into the one that's appropriate for the wealth level of that particular family or unit. And then it'll move from there, and it's going to try to find a job. So it's going to look for the closest commercial zone or industrial zone, or, you know, maybe even a fire station or something, and try to find work. But, you know, because it's going to find work, you're going to see the car come out of this house and drive to the local place where it finds a job. So literally everything in the game is happening in real time with, you know, cars and people that are living their lives in the city.
Wow.
It's cool. And it's not just that. It's also things like electricity and sewage that move along the roads from like from the power plant to the various houses. If your city doesn't have adequate power, then if you go into the view that shows you the way the power is flowing, you'll see the electricity coming out of the power plant and going along the roads and finding all the closest buildings, which are going to be receiving power. But if you get far enough away, it's going to brown out, and you're going to see the buildings that aren't getting power because, you know, there's not enough to get there. So then when you build a new power plant, electricity will, you know, find the houses that don't have any electricity, and they'll all come on. And it's kind of neat. They come on one at a time, and there's this like clicking light switch kind of sound effect that happens like rapidly one after the other. And it's kind of cool the way the whole city just turns on when it receives power.
So, from the sound of it, it sounds like the older games gave the illusion that the city is alive, but this game has the city that is actually alive, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assessment. And it's really a question of whether or not these new features are of the same value as the features that are missing from SimCity 4. And that's where there's a lot of debate on the internet. It's a pretty split community right now. There's a lot of heated debate by a lot of very passionate people. And, you know, we're going to have to see what happens when the game releases on March 5th.
Indeed. And I hopefully could buy a computer that can play it, because I really want to get it. So, I really do. I'm like, from what you've told me and from what I've seen. And you know what? The origin thing, I don't like that. But, you know, this is one time I may give EA a pass. So,
you know, I've become less and less bothered by that over the last year or so. I mean, when it first came out, I was as furious as everybody else. But it has been improving, the origin service. I mean, it's still not Steam, but it has been improving. I'm still not very happy about the always online requirement for a lot of their products. In terms of the platform itself, though, it has come along a bit. I'm hoping that Uplay follows suit, because Uplay, whatever it is, really needs a lot of work. But that's awesome. A whole other topic. Awesome. By the way, I also
played... So is that all you've been playing?
No, I also played, just for fun, when the beta ended, I just needed more SimCity. So I went and I played the SNES version, just for the hell of it. It's still fun to this day, the SNES version.
Nice. Would you say it's a pretty intuitive port, considering that, you know, the SimCity games are known for using a mouse and keyboard input as opposed to a controller? Does that affect the game in any way, shape, or form?
Well, the cool thing about the interface is that while it would be slow trying to navigate using the old Super Nintendo D-pad, you can press the select button to jump directly to the sidebar, which has all your icons for the things that you're going to build. And then when you press the select button again, it moves your cursor back to wherever it was. So that little feature makes, you know, the lack of a keyboard and mouse a little less drastic. And, you know, it's an old game, but they did a pretty good job with it. I mean, but there's bugs everywhere, and it's kind of funny. If you build like a road on like a shoreline, and then you delete the road, instead of having a shoreline there, you're just going to have like a box of land. So I mean, there's definitely problems with it. But for a game that's that old, and it really does hold up, it's still fun.
And especially for that genre, because if you look at games in that genre, sometimes those games don't age very well.
Part of what was cool about SimCity is on Super Nintendo is there was some of that Nintendo charm in it. I think Bowser could like rampage around the city. I never actually saw that. But and there's also this character that's like your little advisor that jumps out from time to time to give you a piece of advice. And it's definitely different from the old versions that were on the old Amigas and everything else. I mean, the Super Nintendo version was built to be more accessible for sure.
But that's nice. Yeah. So they replaced the giant Godzilla clone with Bowser then?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they did.
Alright, so is that it, or did you play anything else?
I'm also still playing Diablo 3. My brother's still playing it, my buddy Spencer's playing it, so yeah, I've been playing a lot of Diablo 3 lately, a lot more than I ever thought I would ever play again after not playing it for a year, but I'm still enjoying it. And I made another $9 this week, so hey.
Nice! Auction!
Woohoo!
The auction system, yay! Alright, so that looks like you were done with what you've been playing, right?
Yep, that's it.
All right, Ted, what have you been playing?
You mean like over the past week or the past 20 minutes while I listen to that shit go on forever and ever?
Oh, shit. Past week and the past 20 minutes.
I got that PlayStation Plus Guardians of Middle Earth because it's a MOBA and I wanted to try it out. And, I don't know why I would keep playing it, because it's okay, I guess, but everything League of Legends does is better. I guess if you don't have a PC, you could play it. I don't know. It's pretty laggy, too.
So is that,
I mean, how's the controller work?
Oh, the controls are kind of interesting how they managed to do that. So what they decided to do, well, you don't have a keyboard and mouse. So the left stick moves your character, and the right stick aims you. So you can move and aim in different directions. Now, everything you do is like an area of effect, so even your auto attacks hit anything in your targeting reticle. So you hold down R2 or whatever the crap... You know, I only played it on PlayStation, not going to do it with the Xbox controls. Hold down R2 to auto attack, and then you have four abilities mapped to each of the four face buttons that also have their own targeting reticles. But the thing is you get past that, you get past some of the changes they made to make it fit on a console, and it doesn't do anything really different other than you can kind of make your towers do things differently. You can change your towers, and you can change your minions. That is literally the only major difference between this and League of Legends, and League of Legends is way more polished, and it's free.
And that's the PlayStation Plus game that came out
yesterday. It came out last Tuesday. For those of listening, and it should still be free by the time you listen to this. I'm sure it'll be free for several weeks. The game that's being pulled shortly after this podcast will be airing is King of Fighters 13. So that's your last chance to get King of Fighters 13.
Ted already got King of Fighters 13. Already got.
Did you spend any time with it?
I liked it. I beat it once in arcade mode.
It's they actually did a good job with the arcade mode this time. Story mode actually explains like what the point of this trilogy was, because they're really kind of vague with King of Fighters 2003, 11, and 13. But I mean, in the end, it was kind of like Doctor Who, so or something. I don't know.
Like Doctor Who. Okay. All right. So what else have you been playing?
I did this week's Halo 4. Spartan Ops, that was pretty good. I like what they've been doing with making it feel more cohesive and making it feel more pressing. This is the first time that I can remember that there was a Spartan Ops mission you could actually lose.
What is that?
Episode 7, Chapter 1. If the guy's ship takes too much damage, you lose. So you have to protect it.
Is it pretty easy or is it pretty difficult?
You actually need a team that knows what they're doing.
Okay. So getting actual friends instead of a bunch of 12-year-olds that happen to play Halo would be the best direction.
Or play after bedtime. Okay. Wish I could say the same for the other game I've been playing, which is League of Legends. The Season 3 is officially underway, and I've been getting my ranked matches in. They have changed the way ranked mode works to feel a lot more like StarCraft 2. So you feel like you're progressing, even though nothing is technically changed under the hood. You feel like you're making more, because instead of one giant like experience bar you're filling, imagine filling a lot of smaller experience bars. That's what's basically happening here. You get put in one of six different leagues and in one of five divisions within the league, and you can try to advance up divisions, and then if you make it all the way to Division 1, you can try to get to the next tier. It's you know, it's progression, but it feels fun because you see how far you are from winning and getting to the next level.
I was going to ask you about seasons, because I'm not wholly familiar with League of Legends. So, explain Seasons to me.
Seasons is actually, it's literally a competitive gaming season. They actually have, if you go to lolesports.com, you can even see this season's scheduled matches. Starts tomorrow on the 7th. But basically the whole point of Seasons is there is actually a beginning and an end. And at the end, a team will win. And I believe the prize this year is, this season is $5 million.
Wow.
$5 million. I think that's the entire pot for Season 3, but even if that's the case, first place will probably win $2 million of that, which is, you know, that's fuck you money. Fuck you money is a term when you have enough money, you can walk up to people and say, fuck you.
Ah, just playing a video game. Who would have thought, man?
But the in-between seasons is when they make the biggest changes. They made a ton. They made a UI change for League of Legends to make things clearer and easier. They use a different font. Everything feels different. They've changed all the items that are available in the shop. Some have been completely removed and a bunch have been added. So, I mean, it's basically like, okay, season's coming. Here's the rule change for this season. And then as usual, as it goes on, they introduce new characters.
It sounds like, it kind of reminds me, it's not the same exact thing, but it kind of reminds me, as someone who tabletop games, it sounds like when they release a new edition of, say, a card game or a new edition of a, you know, role-playing game, it's kind of similar to that, right? Would you say?
I don't think it's that far removed. I think that's on the nose.
That's what I was thinking. That kind of reminded me. So, what else have you been playing, Ted?
I finished Borderlands 2, so all the DLC available. And I'm not ready for True Vault Hunter mode yet. So I found out that game has raid bosses. I'm like, oh, cool. So like all four of us get together and then we have to fight an extra hard character. Little did I know it was more than that. You ever play World of Warcraft?
A bit.
I did. I don't.
A couple thousand hours. Yeah.
You ever heard the phrase don't stand in the fire?
Oh, yes.
It's a term referring to the fact that many raid bosses in World of Warcraft would throw things on the ground you should not stand in, and this was a mechanic that was overused.
Yeah, same kind of thing as in Diablo 3, actually.
I go to a raid boss in Borderlands 2 in the Mr. Torg DLC. It's Pyro Pete, and his raid boss version, he can shoot fire and corrosion. But I find that he doesn't behave like a normal Borderlands guy, which is like run at you and get shot in the head.
You know, I really need a pop in that fucking game. It's been sitting on my shelf since September, gathering dust.
Yeah, I've played through the whole game, and I started True Vault Hunter mode. The only raid boss that was in the game when I was playing it, though, it was just the one for the very last quest.
Right.
And I found a friend who had a maxed out character. He was able to solo the damn thing. So I don't know how much of a raid boss it really is.
I guess what I'm disappointed about is when you fight Pyro Pete, basically he has all these patterns and he shoots things on the ground, you have to dodge, and he has area of effect attacks, and there's a mechanic where he will always set you on fire and you have to turn valve on a wall to make some water shoot out that you stand under. And I thought, wait a minute, this feels like fighting a World of Warcraft boss. Oh, Nova time, you know, get to the pipe. And I'm reminded of all the times on Ventrilo fighting raid bosses, and I thought, this was not the game that I thought I wanted to play anymore. So I may be done with Borderlands 2 because it has gone into World of Warcraft territory and I do not care.
I still need to pop it in.
I'm still looking forward to playing the DLC.
Yeah, I'm level 40 right now. I finished all three campaigns and pretty much all the side quests. So
True Vault Hunter mode is interesting because basically all the enemies in the game are not just, you know, not just more HP, but they actually have some new abilities and things to throw at you.
I've heard they also have resistances as well.
You come across like armored versions of some of the older enemies, and they're quite a pain in the ass.
Is this unlocked after you beat the game?
You continue with your same character at the
it's
same
like
level.
It's like PlayStation 2 on Borderlands 1.
What else have you been playing?
Obviously, I'm playing The Twilight Zone. I did a review of that, and I generally like it. I think it's not the easiest pinball game to play, but to me, it's the one I'm very familiar with in real life, and I was really happy with the way it turned out. And just prior to recording this podcast, I did unlock Lost in the Zone, which is the ultimate mode of that pinball table, and I was very happy with that. Farsight actually is, their QA needs a little work. There's actually a bug in the Twilight Zone pinball table where if you try to start a game immediately after it ends, your game will force quit, and then the next game you play will be in two-player mode. It's strange. They've had some weird issues. There was some slowdown on the Black Knight table, which they later fixed, but it was some very strange issues, and it's a weird table-by-table basis that this is happening. It's not like the whole thing is screwed up. It's just, you know...
I have to say, though, despite those relatively minor flaws, I commend them for what they're doing because, you know, look what's happening to pinball. I mean, I love pinball. But, you know, especially where I live, it's, you know, there's maybe four tables in my whole city that I can go find and play, you know?
Yeah, they're extinct in arcades, yeah. But it's great that they live on these consoles.
Between this and the announcement of Star Wars Pinball, I think everyone's going nuts.
It must be great to play a pinball game like that you played when you were a kid and to just be able to play it as much as you want.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that I now have it in this portable platform. I also picked up a pinball arcade on my tablet to see how that would go, and it goes quite well.
I would love for them to make the Terminator 2 pinball machine.
You may not have to wait too long, because they have talked about that, and they have said it actually is possible for them to do it.
So let me ask you this, and I'll answer first, of course, real quick. What pinball machines would you guys like to see? For me, and maybe this is nostalgia, I don't know if it actually was a good board, but I really enjoyed the Jurassic Park pinball machine from back in the day. I really like that.
That one wasn't bad. Well, I would love Adam's Family, but due to licensing reasons, that one will likely never happen. Star Wars The Next Generation is actually happening at the end of, in the middle of March, so that's great. And
another, The Next Generation.
Yeah, in fact, there's also another table that I always wanted. Attack from Mars, it was made in 96, not the Pinball 2000 version, though I like that, but that one's also actually coming to Pinball Arcade in March as well. Or if you have the tablet version or Android or iOS, that's actually out now. But nice. It's coming to Vita and PS3 at the in March. And the tables that are coming next week, I'm actually kind of excited for, too.
What's coming next week?
Crap, can't remember. I know I'm supposed to be excited for it. Scared Stiff. Scared Stiff is coming next week.
Yeah, they come out with some great tables. The one that I gotten really good at was Bride of Pinball. I love that one. I mean,
I remember that.
Yeah, that was not the most fancy, you know, flashy pinball game, but it's I like it a lot. I had a lot of fun with that.
That one has a neat, nice, clear objective, which is you want to make her human, and they communicate that well. It's similar to a theme park. You want to have good theming, but you basically want your theming to complement the fact that you have one ahead a clear objective, so you know where you want to shoot that pinball. You're just not randomly shooting it around.
All right, I got a question for you, Ted. You've played a lot of these digital pinball games.
Yes.
What do you think about all the digital effects that could never actually be done in real pinball that they use in these games?
I'm actually fine with it. It's one of those things where they realize that they can do this stuff, especially some of the stuff they did with the Marvel pinball tables, and we're talking about Zen Studios here. It's fantastic. You know, if you're not going to do a table that's grounded in reality, then why even try, you know? As long as the physics makes sense, do wacky stuff.
What I see is a lot of comparisons to Pinball Arcade and Zen Pinball. And the fact of the matter is that I don't feel it's fair to compare them because they both have two different objectives in mind.
They're not competing with each other. I mean, one of the nice things is that the platforms are, for the most part, free. Zen Pinball 2 is a free download on the PlayStation. Pinball FX 2 is a free download. And Pinball Arcade costs $10, but comes with four of the better tables that have come out in the past 30 years. And then everything after that is, you know, a platform. So they're platforms. You're not, like, buying one to spite the other. They're DLC models, so you can buy whatever you want to buy and feel good about it.
And they do different things, like the Farsight game is meant to preserve historical actual tables, whereas the Zen one is supposed to kind of move it forward in the digital hour.
Absolutely right. And they both know it, and I don't think they feel like they compete with each other. It might seem that way because they're both pinball games, but I don't feel like, you know, I'm not buying one or the other. I feel like Star Wars Pinball is going to be great, and they'll be getting my money on that. My only problem is I wish everything was cross-buy because I have tables on Pinball FX2 on the Xbox that I want to play on my Vita, but you know it doesn't work that way now, does it?
Yeah, that's a problem. But
yeah, that's a real frustration.
What about you, Ari? Any pinballs you want to see?
Like I mentioned before, the Terminator pinball moot would be great to see in digital form. It's like, I know there were other games that I played back in the day, but I can't, like, remember specifics anymore. You did mention Jurassic Park, though. I agree with you on that one. That'd be cool.
Yeah. The giant dinosaur, I remember the T-Rex would pick up the ball and all that. That was pretty cool. So.
Yeah.
That was a good one. So anything else you've been playing, Ted?
I'm getting back into Street Fighter Cross Tekken for the 2013 patch. I have now bought my fourth version of the game. I originally got that on Xbox 360, and then I got the 25th anniversary box set, which came with it on PlayStation 3. I ended up buying the Vita version on a whim, and I just rebought the PC version because the Steam version is having a sale, and the version I got in a contest for free on Origin won't have the sale. So I'm like, screw it, I'm rebuying the whole thing on Steam. So yes,
Might as well.
I also own Super Street Fighter 4 on every platform it's available for as well. So if you ask me what platform I have it on, the answer is yes.
Great.
Well, I can't say anything because I have Street Fighter 4 both on... I don't have it on PC, but I have it on 360 and PS.
They gave it away on PlayStation 3 for Street Fighter... Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. I think it's still available on PlayStation Plus right now.
It is. But I owned it before...
Yeah,
even came on PlayStation.
And honestly, that's actually a big download, and I actually have the physical disc, and it's fine by me. It's actually a 17 gig download, so.
Hence why physical media is still relevant. That's just me, I suppose. So
the hard drive I've allocated to Steam is actually filled up. I had to delete my copy of Alien vs. Predator, which I still have to play.
Alien vs. Predator, which the one that came out a couple years back.
Actually, both of them. The one from 2000 and the one from a couple years back.
Okay.
I have a bad backlog, Anthony. I have a very bad backlog.
Yes, it's the worst backlog in the entire Gamer Horizon group, I think.
Possibly combined.
I don't know. I haven't really mentioned my backlog, but it's quite ridiculous. Several hundred games.
That's cute.
Ted, is it several thousand for you?
No, but it is in the high hundreds.
So about
if we count all the retail physical releases, it's nuts.
Yeah.
Can you know what? I want to do something for next week, Ted. If you have time, count your entire backlog.
Okay.
But you already know the number from your database?
No, because I bought some games since the last time I updated the database.
Hmm.
Yeah, I just got... also, if you count PlayStation Mobile games, the ones they've been giving away for free one a week, yeah, then it grows even more.
At this point, let's do this. Ted, physical copies only, okay?
Physical copies of games? Oh, then it's actually kind of low. Unless we count Steam.
Yeah, Steam is the majority of my library of games now.
Yeah, Steam is my...
Okay, let's count all of them. Let's count all of them, then, if that's the case. And yeah. I'm very curious to see what the number is next week.
If I lose to Ari, I'll actually feel good about myself.
Oh, do I actually have to count too? Okay.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to.
I don't know. I kind of wish I had that database that you had. That could be useful.
It would be useful. I have a lot of shit to play. So anything else you've been playing, Ted?
I think that covers everything I've been playing.
So what have I been playing? Well, I'm still on my old school kick. Now, 2 weeks ago, I was playing really obscure stuff that no one in this group heard of. Last week, I played some kind of off-the-wall stuff. So, what about this week? Well, I've been playing ActRaiser.
Yay! I love ActRaiser.
Oh my god, I love that game so much.
That and, indeed, like, Soul Blazer are, like, my favorite Super Nintendo games. Well,
I love ActRaiser.
Among my favorite Super Nintendo games.
ActRaiser is so cool. You know, it's what I love about ActRaiser is it's still unique to this day. It's a combination of genres that weren't even exactly new at the time, but just that combination, you have never seen that since.
Well, the way they did, like, the city building sim in that game, I've never seen anything quite like it, where you kind of, like, tell the people the direction you want them to go and build, and then they just kind of do it. And you have to, like, lead them to the monster lairs and stuff. It's an awesome game. The side-scrolling holds up, too, actually. Side-scrolling action.
And the level design and the side-scrolling pieces are superb. I love how you can manage the people.
Oh, my God. That game is great. Best freaking soundtracks.
That's great.
I also like how, you know, you could And if this is correctly, I like how you can send the townspeople to seal up monster caves and things like that. You know, like you were saying, you could have them do various things, and that's what makes ActRaiser unique. It's not the deepest.
You want to get as many people in the city as you can, and sometimes the only way to do that is to trigger an earthquake and break down all their huts. And then they'll build up brick buildings that can have more people.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much you can do in that game, and I think what makes it unique is, again, it's not the deepest sim, but the side-scrolling aspect. I mean, that level, it's not like they half-assed any part of that game. The side-scrolling, the level design in the side-scrolling parts are very good.
I was just disappointed that the sequel just got rid of the sim. The sequel was pure side-scroller.
Yeah, the only thing about the sequel that I can remember is that the secret boss basically was a boss from the first ActRaiser. Or I'm completely misremembering that. But yeah, they took the sim out of ActRaiser 2.
That's another game that just really needs a proper sequel.
Yeah, it's still unique. You know, it's what they made this game and they never revisited it. You know,
have you played Soul Blazer?
Yes, I have. I like Soul Blazer, but, you know, I like it, but I'm kind of partial to both, what was it?
Terranigma,
and what's the, Gaia.
Illusion of Gaia.
Illusion of Gaia.
Yeah, that's the trilogy,
supposedly. Yeah, actually, there's a fourth one, but a lot of people forget because it was bad. It's called Grandstream Saga.
I played that.
Yeah, but Grandstream Saga was not very good, in my opinion.
No, it wasn't.
I remember buying it, and I was like, oh, it's follow-up to Terranigma and Illusion of Gaia, and I was all...
Well, Terranigma never actually got a official U.S. release, so if you want to play Terranigma, you have to get it emulated. Or an import.
And Illusion of Gaia is pretty difficult to get. I don't think it's been released on even Virtual Console, to be honest.
That's the problem with these Virtual Console. I mean, you're not ever going to get every game. And some of these games that we love are going to be lost to the ether if we're not careful.
And they're not exactly cheap. I mean, they're trying to sell these ROMs for $10 or $5.
Well, the intellectual property does have some weight behind it. And $5 is like a bag of Doritos, you know what I mean?
Have a huge library of those things if they were a little bit cheaper.
Well, you know, I think you have a point, because, you know, I think some NES game should be a couple bucks, not $5.
Yeah, I know Square Enix just did a sale on a bunch of their PlayStation stuff, but talk about a company that needs to learn how to price their digital content.
Especially on the iPhone, on the App Store.
Oh, the iStore is ridiculous for them.
I didn't hear this for a second, but I heard outrageous prices on iPhone. I assume we're talking about Square Enix.
Yes.
See, I didn't even hear half of that for some reason, and yet I still know what we're talking about. Square Enix is a company that is basically relying solely on Tomb Raider to get them through the next couple of months. Although I have to admit, have you seen the Japanese trailer for Tomb Raider?
Not the Japanese. No.
Those Japanese voice actresses are really good at emoting pain. I just want to say that out loud, but Square bought Idus. Who's going to buy Square?
You know what, Square Enix? You guys have Tomb Raider. You guys have Hitman. It's great that you're focusing on those. But how about And this is a pipe dream, but how about the Chrono franchise? How about some of those other classic franchises? I doubt Xenogears would come out because, basically that was developed by Monolith, which is with Nintendo, but, make an actual Front Mission game, not no Front Mission third-person shooter bullshit,
Anthony, very carefully about what you're asking. If they make Chrono Break now, it will be the kind of thing where they will release DLC where you can get a Hitman outfit for the main character.
Mass Effect outfit, too.
Well, they did that for the Final Fantasy 13 too, but I mean, basically,
that's why I brought it up.
Every good memory you ever had will be ruined when they release a new entry in the franchise, and modern economics dictates that will there be DLC that makes you feel bad about yourself.
If they're going to follow up to Chrono Cross, it's probably going to be character DLC.
Oh no!
Oh god, that's
Okay.
I guess we're hoping for more of a Chrono Trigger sequel than a Chrono Cross.
Dude, what if they released Chrono as DLC for $8.95, completely ignoring the fact that that brand's canon? Would they do it? Yeah, probably.
Probably.
Also, apparently Final Fantasy 13-2, the only way to get the real ending is to buy DLC. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
What is this?
DLC pack that I guess... I actually went through it. I was one of the suckers that did it, but I barely remember it because that game is such a blur of confusing storylines.
It's a story about Lightning, but I guess like she's the real ending.
Well, it's not even like the real ending because no matter what, the real ending was the one that was included with the base game, and that was basically to be continued. And we're waiting for the third game now in the series, so I don't know. There's definitely more to it with the DLC, but I wouldn't really call it a proper ending.
Fantastic. Well, Square, stay free.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do like the Final Fantasy 13 games. I'm alone in that.
You're not alone in it. I actually really enjoyed Final Fantasy 13. Maybe not at the same level as I would expect from the series.
Right.
It's definitely a low in that regard. But for what it did do, I actually enjoyed the battle engine later in the game once it became somewhat complicated and challenging. And also, the second half of the game, once you actually get to the planet where you can actually explore a world, that was much better than the first 30 hours. It's just kind of inexcusable that you have to wait 30 hours to get to that point. And even when you get there, it's not quite as, you know, it's not really what a Final Fantasy fan was expecting in terms of a planet, you know?
But I will say this, and I get a lot of hate for this. Let me tell you why I get a lot of hate for this. I like it better than 12. And I'm not a fan of 12. I made that obvious. I'm just.
I enjoyed 12, but I thought since PlayStation 2, the best one they've had to this day is Final Fantasy X.
Final Fantasy X is a solid game. Where's that fucking HD remake?
Yeah, where is it? I don't know. It's on the horizon.
So. It'll come out when Versus 13 comes out. I may not be joking here. At first, I thought I was telling a joke, and I thought, wait a minute, that actually could be a thing.
No, Ted speaks the truth. Oh, I just got some information.
If they do finally finish that, I really hope that they include all the features that were in the international version of the game.
I imagine they would. That's what they did for the HD remake of some game in my mind. I want to say they did that for Kingdom Hearts, but that also might be something I just invented just now, rather than looked up on the internet.
I heard that they're recording new voice acting for the new HD remake of Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah,
that's what I've heard.
Yeah, they couldn't get Lance Bass to do Sephiroth, so they're going to get... what's the other guy? No.
That's who does Sephiroth.
Joey Fatone. They're getting Joey Fatone. That's a joke. They're not getting Joey Fatone. See, the problem with that is I had to think about NSYNC for a while. It's like, wait, who is in NSYNC? Lance Bass.
Justin Timberlake.
Lance Bass. And then I had to think about Robot Chicken. What was that one called? Enter the fat one. Joey Fatone!
Moving on. Since this is sadly, this is an abridged show, so we got to cut it short, but we're going to do a mailbag for our first mailbag of the season. Hooray!
And did we do a mail before? There's a question.
I think we did do one like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, this is actually the second mailbag.
My bad. Okay. My bad. I guess I don't remember the first one. But this one's actually very interesting and may cause some dissension. So this is from Michael, and he says, "Dear Gamer Horizon, do you think that Peter Molyneux is the M. Night Shyamalan of gaming? I ask because both of them have a lot in common, such as their works both get a lot of criticism and controversies by critics and fans alike. Both of them are very ambitious, and both of their works get a lot of hype by the media, etc. Do you guys think this is true?" Ted, go.
Well, if you compare them to and their careers, I think one thing stands out. They believe that their works are more important than they actually are, except the thing about video games is that we're a lot more jumpy and critical, but in this case, we're right. I think also Peter Molyneux believes in his own hype. At least he did until Curiosity came out, and they couldn't even get that right. A game where you tap on squares, and they couldn't even get that right. It had critical bugs. Tap on squares. Oh, no. They couldn't get that right. And I think when Peter Molyneux broke down and cried in an interview, I thought, well, maybe he finally gets it. And then they did a Kickstarter for their new game, and it somehow passed at the very end, and I think they haven't learned a goddamn thing. And I think that, yeah, absolutely, he's the M. Night Shyamalan of gaming. I think he's someone who believes far into his own hype more than he realizes. I feel like he's the kind of game designer that doesn't, like, play games.
That's a good point. Before I go on what I want to say about it, Ari, go ahead and respond.
I completely disagree with you, Ted. I think that he has contributed a great deal to the whole God Sim genre over the years. And in terms of, like, M. Night, whatever the hell his name is, there hasn't been anything by Peter Molyneux that was, like, as completely hated as that Avatar movie. I have immense respect for Peter Molyneux, for what he's achieved over the years. He may not have made perfect games, but I think he has created a lot of amazing moments within his games. I like to talk about Black and White as an example. The whole that whole game failed as a real-time strategy game, which is what, for some reason, they made it the objectives of the game kind of real-time strategy. But in terms of the sim that was underneath it all, I thought it was fascinating, and I really enjoyed that part of Black and White. And of course, you know, Populous is it just spawned an entire genre, really. And I'm thrilled that they got funded for that Kickstarter, and I'm very much looking forward to Project Goddess when it comes out. I mean, it's very rough from what they've shown so far, but I'm still looking forward to it. He may fool me for the 12th time, but I'm still looking forward to it.
Here's what I got to say on this. I agree with both Ted and Ari, but I my point of view is more of a progression. When M. Night Shyamalan came out, the first few of his movies were great. That's where the problem lies, okay? You know, I like The Sixth Sense was a great movie, I thought. I even liked Unbreakable, and I even liked Signs. You know, I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I thought his first few movies were strong. Then he started making bullshit, like all his, you know, Lady in the Water bullshit. You know, he started making his movies. They became more pretentious as they went on. And I think the same thing has happened with Molyneux games. Like, I agree with Ari, Populous, you know. I love Black and White, you know. But again, I think he kind of went downhill with Fable. I mean, I played through the original Fable. It's a decent game, but it's not a classic, in my opinion. He was so ambitious with Fable in particular, that's when I think he fell apart. And then Fable 2, I never completed, in Fable 3, yeah. So, and that, I agree with Ted, but in the early games, I agree with Ari. I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but...
I don't know, I heard the podcast you guys did last week, and I thought you were a bit harsh on the guy.
Well, Alex and I kind of have our reasons.
I know. You do have your reasons, but well, I digress.
You know, but anyway, you know, that's how I feel. I don't know if you agree with my sentiment, Ted, on that, but
I just feel strongly about some of the stuff he's done. I actually didn't like Populous, so I mean, from there, it's all downhill.
Did you like any of M. Night Shyamalan's early films, though, Ted?
I watched Signs, and I liked until it was about to end, and then it was dumb.
That's. I guess you feel the same about both of them. So, so
for the record, I also think Braid is one of the worst video games of all time. So, if we're talking about controversial opinions, I think Braid is an utter piece of crap.
You're my best friend. You're my best friend. Have you? Oh my gosh! Thank you. I have someone in Gamer Horizon who feels that Braid is a pretentious game. Thank you.
Braid invented pretentious games, and then actually, it didn't. That was Beyond Good and Evil that invented pretentious games. Beyond Good and Evil sucks.
I don't know. You heard me.
Beyond Good and Evil is one of the most overrated games in the history of our industry.
Oh gosh, Alex and I have gotten in so many debates over Braid. And I always thought I was alone because I'm like, Braid's so great! And I'm like...
I thought Braid was fine for a while, and then they started saying things, and I thought, wait, they couldn't. And then you get to the end, and they just basically, if you're familiar with the story of the creation of the atomic bomb, they beat you over the head with it. I said, this sucks!
Oh, what about the gameplay, though? I mean, come on. That was a good game.
If the gameplay was to teach me about the obsession of creating nuclear weapons, then sign me up for the Manhattan Project.
I mean, it's impossible for you guys to completely hate Braid. I don't understand that. I thought it was a great game. I don't know about the story so much, even though I heard it was a critically well-received storyline. Obviously not a well-Ted-received storyline. But the game itself, I mean, I thought the gameplay was solid. There were good puzzles, and it was a good game.
I agree with you.
I have to...
And normally, the presentation of a game doesn't affect my ability to enjoy its mechanics, unless the presentation is to a level that I can only describe as abhorrent.
First, I thought the game played fine, but then even the mechanics felt pretentious in what it was trying to do with the game's narrative about nuclear weapons or whatever.
I feel like if I enjoy the mechanics, then it validates like some kind of predator abuse, like some kind of domestic abuse that happened to me when I played Braid.
That's another theory I've heard that game's about. I've heard people say that they think it's about domestic abuse, too. So, I mean, you know, that's how pretentious it is. You know, you can't even find the real meaning for it, so... I don't know. Ari, though, I respect your opinion, man. If you enjoy it, you know, Alex, my buddy, he enjoys it.
I just love indie games in general. Anything that's innovative and different from what we've seen before is usually something good in my book.
You know, there are a lot of indie games I enjoy too, and we could talk about that another time. But sadly, guys, the shortened version of Game Horizon has come to an end. So, any last words?
I'd give Fez a solid 7 if I had to review it.
If you're still debating on SimCity, I suggest you give the gameplay a try. If you get into the beta, just when the next beta comes around, if they do an open beta, if there's a demo, give it a shot and see if it's something that you find fun. It may not be SimCity 4, but it is definitely something that I think is a good product, and I'm looking forward to it a lot.
I want to say it's great to see Skullgirls making a comeback with a reveal of the DLC character and the fact they're going to kickstart it, and there's all this stuff happening, and they're releasing in Japan on Valentine's Day, and they're coming out on the PC. And it's great to see that game actually rise from its grave.
Rise from your grave. As for me, go on the goddamn virtual console and buy ActRaiser.
Hell yeah.
I already bought it.
Yeah, but other people need to buy it because it's such a unique game. So that does it for another episode of Game Horizon. So make sure that you go visit our website at GameHorizon.com. There you'll find editorials, you will find reviews, and you will find the latest news in the world of gaming. Also, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about this podcast or even the website, send it to mailbox@gamerhorizon.com. And with that, guys, we're done.